The headlines, the British military says an Israeli-owned ship has come under attack off the coast of Oman. Hundreds of thousands of people in China are put under coronavirus lockdown as the country battles its worst outbreak in months. And Japan expands a coronavirus state of emergency to more areas and extends one already imposed in Tokyo that hosts the Olympics. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, the UK military says an Israeli-owned ship has come under attack off the coast of Oman in the Arabian Sea. According to the British military, the vessel was targeted near Masira Island late on Thursday. It says the attack was not an act of piracy and an investigation is underway. The Israeli company that owns the ship says it was traveling from Tanzania's Dar es Salaam to Fujairah, a port in the UAE. The company said there was no cargo on board the ship at the time of the incident. In recent months, several other Israeli ships have also been targeted in various maritime routes across the world. The Yemeni army says it has managed to liberate two areas in the second phase of the operation dubbed Nasr al-Mubin in the southern province of Al-Baida. An army spokesman said hundreds of Saudi-backed mercenaries and their Takfiri allies were killed or injured during the operation. Yahya Sarai added that the army is seeking to clear remaining areas of Takfiri elements in the province. The army and allied Ansarullah forces launched a massive offensive against the Saudi-led coalition's bases in Baida province 2 days ago, taking control of several strategic points there. The army has intensified its attacks in retaliation for 6 years of Saudi-led war on the country that has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis. Israeli forces have violently clashed with Palestinian mourners in the occupied West Bank, injuring dozens of them. The clashes took place near the city of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Israeli forces attacked people attending the funeral of Shokat Khalid, who was shot dead on Thursday. They fired tear gas and rubber bullets against the mourners. Israeli forces also attacked Palestinians after the Friday prayers in the town of Beita, south of Nablus, and some other locations. At least 40 Palestinians were injured in the clashes. A new report says Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian minors with no recourse or accountability. The report by the Defense for Children International Palestine added that the children killed did not pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers. And Laura Candela has more in this report.
Palestinians accused Israel of using unjustified deadly force against Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank. In its latest report, Defense for Children International Palestine stated that the Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian children with no recourse or accountability. In its report, DCI Palestine revealed that evidence it has obtained shows children killed didn't pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers at the time of their killing. The group says that Israeli forces used lethal force against Palestinian children in circumstances that may amount to extrajudicial or willful killing.
Killing unarmed minors amounts to war crime and even crime against humanity. Israeli soldiers act in line with shoot-to-kill policy, opening fire to kill Palestinian children. The troopers know their military establishment will hold any of them accountable for killing innocent Palestinians.
On Friday, a 17-year-old Palestinian boy, Mohammed Tamimi, was fatally shot by live ammunition in his back during a peaceful anti-settlement protest that was held in Nabi Saleh town, West Ramallah. Meanwhile, on Monday, a 17-year-old Yusuf Nawaf Mhareb, a resident of the Ramallah area village of Abwin, succumbed to wounds he had sustained a prayer when he was shot in the neck by Israeli forces during a protest against Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip. Experts say that under international law, the use of lethal force during a protest is allowed only when a direct and lethal threat to life or of serious injury exists. And as usual, Israel continues violating international law, including rules which limit the intentional lethal use of firearms, in particular against children.
Israeli forces have a twofold purpose by targeting Palestinian children. First, they want to intimidate Palestinian children to prevent them from taking part in anti-Israeli activity, and second, to oppress the Palestinians in general, to impose and strengthen the Israeli military control.
Since the beginning of the year, 10 Palestinian minors were killed in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces using live ammunition. Palestinians accuse Israel of using unjustified force against their children. They even warn that Israeli soldiers will continue killing children in cold blood as long as they won't face inquiry. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Iran has reported over 24,000 new daily coronavirus infections, taking the total caseload to more than 3.8 million. The health ministry also confirmed some 270 new fatalities for the past day. That brings to more than 90,000 the number of people succumbed to the disease since its outbreak in Iran. According to health officials, over 5,000 COVID patients are currently in intensive care units. Iran has been grappling with a new surge in infections and deaths since the past few weeks. The uptick is largely blamed on the highly contagious Delta strain. 285 cities are also now designated as red. The COVID task force implementing restrictions to curb the spread of the virus. Iran has started vaccinating prisoners all across the country. The move is part of a vaccination program targeting priority groups. As Salman Kujiri reports, the country has set a record of vaccinating over 430,000 people on a single day.
On the occasion of the Eid al-Ghadir, Iran has officially begun vaccinating prisoners across the nation against the COVID-19 virus. Speaking at the vaccination ceremony, Iran's deputy health minister said that in view of the existing capacity and availability of vaccines, all prisoners will receive the first dose of vaccines in the next 10 days.
In view of the existing capacity and availability of vaccines, all prisoners will receive the first dose of vaccines in the next 10 days. Thanks to the proper observation of health protocols by prisoners, the average number of people infected with the virus in prisons has been less than ordinary people.
In the past couple of days, with the imports of foreign-made vaccines and the entry of domestically produced vaccines into the vaccination basket of the country, the pace of vaccination process has increased to the extent that, according to the Iranian health minister, the country has set a record of vaccinating over 430,000 people on a single day.
In the occasion of the auspicious Eid al-Ghadir, we have begun vaccinating all prisoners across the country. To vaccinate all prisoners and those working at prisons, we need over 200,000 doses of vaccines. This amount has already been supplied, and the vaccination process for prisoners will continue as planned. At today's ceremony at Evin Prison, in Tehran, 250 prisoners were among the first to receive the jabs.
Moreover, centers for drive-in vaccination across the country have been established, and they have played a major role in the increase in the daily vaccination rate. Iran is using a combination of locally produced vaccines and imported foreign-made vaccines in its national vaccination program. According to Iranian health officials, the country's homemade coronavirus vaccines develop immunity against the new mutations of the virus.
According to Iran's health ministry, almost 60 million Iranians will be vaccinated against the virus by the end of the current Iranian year in March 2022, using domestically produced and foreign-made vaccines. Salman Kujiri, Tehran.
China has placed hundreds of thousands of people under lockdown as the country battles its worst outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic in months. Health officials have registered dozens of new daily infections in the eastern city of Nanjing. The outbreak first started among workers at the city's airport earlier this month. The cluster of infections had reached the capital, Beijing, and five provinces by Friday. At least 206 infections across China have been linked to the cluster. The infections have been blamed on the Delta variant, first detected in India. The strain poses a serious challenge to China's zero infection policy. The coronavirus was first detected in the central Chinese city of Wuhan. In late 2019, it then rapidly spread across the world. And Japan has extended a state of emergency to four more regions as COVID cases spike to records amid the Tokyo Olympics. The government has proposed states of emergency in Osaka and three regions near the Olympic host Tokyo through August 31st. It also plans to extend existing states of emergency for Tokyo and Okinawa by the same date. That comes as COVID surges in Japan. On Thursday, new daily cases topped 10,000 for the first time. The authorities blame the surge on highly transmissible Delta variant, denying any link with the Olympics. Delta has also increased infections in the Philippines in recent days. The government now plans a two-week lockdown in the capital, Manila. It will begin on August the 6th. The Philippines has fully restored a key military deal with the United States amid growing tensions In the contested South China Sea, Defense Secretary Delfin Lorenzana announced the decision during a news conference with his American counterpart in Manila. Lorenzana said President Rodrigo Duterte has retracted his earlier decision to terminate the pact. That's known as a visiting forces agreement. It provides rules for the rotation of thousands of U.S. troops in and out of the Philippines for war drills. Last year, President Duterte decided to terminate the pact after the U.S. denied a visa to a senator close to him. Now Washington has welcomed the pact's restoration. The move comes as tensions have been growing in the South China Sea in the past months. The region is a source of dispute between China and several other countries, including the Philippines, over territorial claims by them. Those tensions often escalate as the U.S. sends warships and warplanes to the region. China sees the move as a violation of its sovereignty. It has repeatedly warned the U.S. to stop its military activities. The United States and Russia are trying to walk back from the brink. The two sides have launched a diplomatic effort to try to resolve some of their most serious disputes.
Ties between the United States and Russia are far worse than strained. The two have been on a confrontational path for a very long time. Tensions have been deteriorating over the past years after a series of tit-for-tat actions that have left bilateral diplomatic ties in tatters. Such tit-for-tat actions, like consulate closures or expulsions of diplomats, have made it difficult to even conduct basic bilateral diplomacy. The lack of proper diplomatic contacts between the two rivals has increased the risk of miscalculation that could lead to a potential disaster. Recently, Russia's top diplomat warned that tensions between Washington and Moscow were getting close to a dangerous confrontation. The two sides say they want to prevent any such scenario. This week, diplomats from the U.S. and Russia sat down for talks on strategic stability. The talks in Geneva were arranged in June when U.S. President Joe Biden met his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. Moscow and Washington have deep differences over a host of issues, including the situation in Ukraine, arms control, human rights, and cybersecurity. Observers believe such differences have their roots in the geopolitical rivalry between the two major nuclear-armed states.
I think that what's happened in the last 20 years under Putin's basic leadership, I think for the last 20 years, has been a resurgence of Russian power, of Russian technology, of the place of Russia in the world. And as a major country, the United States doesn't like that.
Can the ongoing diplomatic effort help reduce tensions and pave the way for cooperation?
There was no breakthrough during the negotiations in Geneva on Wednesday, but Russian and U.S. delegations will reconvene for further talks in September. As the ongoing diplomacy has raised hopes of a reduction in tensions, but the two sides are still engaged in acrimonious exchanges.
The meeting on Wednesday was the first in a series of planned talks aimed at enhancing communication and reduce the possibility of missteps. The delegations were headed by U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman and the Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybakov. The U.S. side called the discussions professional and substantive. The Russians said they were satisfied with the conclusions and that America showed readiness for constructive dialogue. But despite the positive signs, controversial comments by the U.S. president drew condemnation from Moscow. In an address to national intelligence officers, Joe Biden accused Russia of trying to interfere in the 2022 U.S. midterm elections. He warned that an escalation in cyber attacks could lead to war. Biden also said Russia has nuclear weapons and oil wells and nothing else to earn money from. The U.S. president claimed this economic weakness makes Russia even more unpredictable and dangerous. The Russians were quick to respond. The Kremlin said Biden's statements showed America's erroneous understanding of modern Russia. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Moscow regrets that America is more of an adversary than a partner, despite the Russian government showing political will to normalize ties. Observers believe the latest exchanges further reveal the depth of distrust and deep differences between Washington and Moscow.
Russians have begun to reassert their normal geographic dominance in the area. And in particular, this was true with Ukraine. And, you know, so can you imagine the situation if the Russians had on the Canadian border, you know, an army? We would freak out. Well, the Russians feel the same way about NATO being in the middle of Europe now. And they felt very, very betrayed by the fact that NATO expanded, because they felt they had a deal in the 1980s with Gorbachev that that wouldn't happen. And so they're upset about that and have been very clear about that.
Problems that have soured bilateral relations are many, and both sides seem unwilling to back down when it comes to strategic issues. The upcoming talks will probably show whether the two sides are serious enough to resolve their problems.
The Eurozone economy has bounced back from a recession driven by the coronavirus pandemic, but the monetary union is still below the pre-crisis level. Data released by Eurostat showed the economy grew by 2% in the second quarter. Italy and Spain saw the biggest growth after encountering a massive economic crisis. Growth was more moderate in Germany and France, the Eurozone's two largest economies. The 19-nation bloc remains 3% down from its pre-pandemic level after experiencing a double-dip recession in the previous two quarters. Figures released by the EU Statistics Office also showed inflation in the Eurozone rose faster than expected this month. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
At least 915 shootings in a single week leaves 430 dead and 1,007 wounded, with the U.S. on track for its deadliest year of gun violence, says Rachel Sharp, reporter, in an article titled U.S. records one shooting every 12 minutes. Stay tuned for more. The United States of America has recorded one shooting every 12 minutes recently, with at least 915 incidents leaving 430 dead and 1,007 wounded as gun violence spirals out of control across the nation. Data from the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive reveals more than 1,000 Americans were wounded or killed in shootings in the 7 days between Saturday, July 17th and Friday, July 23rd. The shootings of the last week comes as the nation is on track to record its deadliest year of gun violence to date. Between January and July 24th, 2021, there has been 25,216 gun-related deaths, including homicides, murders, suicides, unintentional shootings, and defensive gun use incidents. On average, this means 123 people have died every single day in 2021. If the trend continues, almost 45,000 people will lose their lives to gun violence by the end of the year. This figure dwarfs the 43,563 shooting deaths recorded in 2020, which had been the deadliest year for shooting incidents in at least two decades. Gun violence rocked almost every state recently, with at least one gun-related incident recorded in 47 states and the District of Columbia, according to ABC News analysis of GVA data. Illinois recorded the most shootings with 109 incidents in the last week. One shooting recently saw a 14-year-old boy killed and nine others injured in two shootings on the west side of Chicago. Five people were shot in the first shooting in the North Landale section, with five more shot in a second shooting three blocks away less than 5 minutes later. Gun violence has plagued the Windy City in 2021, with the city's crime data showing a 9% jump in shootings so far compared to the same time last year and a 60% jump from 2019. During the July 4th weekend alone, 92 people were shot in the city and 16 were killed. After Illinois, Texas recorded the highest number of shootings last week, with 63 incidents, including a drive-by shooting in Houston that killed one man and injured five others. Pennsylvania was next with 59 shootings, including one shocking incident, where a one-year-old girl was shot inside a convenience store in Philadelphia on July 17th. The infant was caught in the crossfire as people opened fire both inside and outside the store. She is expected to survive. In another incident, a Philadelphia Eagles fan was arrested for allegedly shooting and killing a New York Giants fan during an argument about football while in line for chess stakes at iconic Pat's King of States Eatery. California and New York also recorded high numbers of shootings, with 52 and 48 incidents each in the last week. Governor Andrew Cuomo has described gun violence as a major civil rights issue and announced the state will offer 4,000 summer jobs and full-time jobs with training for the city's youth in the hopes of providing an alternative to gun violence. Cuomo admitted back in May that New York City is now in the throes of a major problem. New York City in particular has been rocked by a crime wave this year, with shootings spiking 21.9% in 2021 compared to last year as of July 18th. There are also 16% more shooting victims this year, the data shows, with 981 people falling prey to gun violence compared to 846 last year. Meanwhile, violence erupted in downtown Milwaukee recently, with three people wounded in two separate shootings as thousands of fans celebrated the Bucks' first NBA championship in 50 years. Over in Seattle, three people were killed and five injured in a series of shootings, all within a three-hour period. In Vasco, California, a sheriff's deputy was shot and killed and two of his colleagues injured in a shooting at home following a standoff with a suspect recently. Kern County Deputy Philip Campos, a father to two young girls and former soldier in the United States Marine Corps, was killed in the line of duty when deputies were called to a residence in Kern County to reports of shots fired. When officers arrived on the scene, the suspect began shooting at them and hours-long standoff ensued. The suspect fired shots at officers again around 2 hours later, striking the three cops. Of the more than 25,000 shooting deaths so far this year, 11,554 were homicides, murders, unintentional shootings, and defensive gun use incidents, with the other 13,662 suicides. The nation has been rocked by a spate of mass shootings this year, with 389 recorded up to July 2014. Back in March, Robert Aaron Long, 21, allegedly killed 8 people, 6 of them Asian women, in a series of attacks at 3 Atlanta spas. Just over the week, gunman Alisa allegedly shot dead 10 people, including a police officer, in a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado. In May, 8 people were shot and killed at a FedEx ground facility in Indianapolis. Children haven't been spared from the nation's skyrocketing gun violence, with 176 kids up to age 11 killed as a result of shootings so far this year. Another 451 have been injured, while the figures are even worse among teenagers. A total of 1,896 children aged 12 to 17 have been injured, and 713 killed through to July 24th. Members of law enforcement are also among the victims of the surge in gun crime, with 33 killed and 193 injured as of July 24th. Shooting deaths have been climbing overall since 2014, rising from 33,804 that year to almost 44,000 in 2020. But the last year took a particularly steep climb amid the pandemic. In light of the spike in gun violence, Joe Biden unveiled a series of executive actions designed to curb gun violence following the shootings. The six actions include a crackdown on the proliferation of ghost guns, which are built from kits, or tightening requirements on pistol braces that allow for more accurate shooting. Biden said mass shootings are a public health crisis and argued he was not trying to impinge on the Second Amendment, a claim gun rights groups and Republicans have made against the introduction of gun control laws.
We get people. Unsafe America.
The United States is experiencing a surge of crime, which could catapult the issue to the top of the political agenda in the near future. A nationwide spike in shootings and murders has made the streets of America unsafer than before, but without much attention from authorities.
It was my middle child's birthday. He was turning 12. And later on that day, we were going to celebrate at home like we do. We were waiting for Wanye to come. when he didn't come, it was devastating.
Wanye had been killed in a drive-by shooting.
Hello, I'm your host Mila Javamagi. Welcome to We the People. In this episode, we try to get to the bottom of the recent spike in crime. We will ask, why is there so much violence in America today? What is the reason for the latest spike in shootings? And what should the government and the nation do to tackle the issue? Stay with us.
We've seen increases from last summer to this summer, in part because of the protests, in part because of the COVID stay at home, people coming out. And I believe there's a tension that has built up in all of the major urban areas that have been shut down.
2021 is on track to be America's deadliest year of gun violence. Data from Gun Violence Archive shows that the number of multiple victim shootings first spiked in April of 2020 and has stayed high ever since. The deadly pattern has continued this year. There have been 160 shootings from 1st of January to 26th of April 2021, in which four or more people were injured or killed, compared to just over 90 shooting incidents during the same period in 2020. And this year's total is nearly double the average for the same time period for every year since 2014. The number of shootings in some cities such as Chicago and New York has more than doubled over the past 2 years. Homicides are also occurring more often. Violence is raging across the United States in all sorts of demographics, from wealthy communities to poorer areas, and in towns and cities run by both Democrats and Republicans.
According to some estimates, major American cities saw a 33% rise in homicides last year. Other estimates put the figure at 25%, but what is for sure is that crime rates appear higher than what is considered usual. Our first guest today is Emilia Viano, president of the International Society of Criminology. Thank you for joining the show, sir.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. What impact does the lack of a sense of security in public have on the society and the economy?
It can have a very, very serious and negative impact. Obviously, if people don't feel secure, they will curtail their activities, for example. They will not participate as much in the life of the city, which also means spending money, for example, going shopping, going to the theater, to the movies, to a restaurant, meeting with friends, participating in concerts, or also taking part in community activities. So people retrench to the places that they consider safe, venture out only if absolutely needed.
Many thanks, Mr. Viano. We'll hear more of your insight later on in the program.
The surge in violence comes amid the coronavirus pandemic, which has affected the everyday lives of average Americans. With the economy strained under the weight of the pandemic, a rise in poverty translates naturally to an increase in crime rates. The rise in shooting corresponds with an increase in gun sales, which jumped at the outset of the coronavirus pandemic as stay-at-home orders unleashed a wave of unemployment across America. FBI background checks, which are conducted when a person attempts to buy a firearm from most dealers, can serve as a proxy for gun sales. In the 13 months since March of 2020, the FBI has seen 3 million background checks in a month at least 11 times, after having just one such month between 1998 and February of 2020. Experts say that while gun sale increases in previous years were related to personal safety fears or tighter gun laws, the current spike is related to worries unique to the coronavirus pandemic.
The loss of jobs, the loss of people's source of income, of their stability, of their home, of just a sense of crisis that they're in. We've seen a dramatic increase, historic increase, in the number of gun sales.
Like in many U.S. cities, COVID-19 has led to police staffing shortages and handcuffed efforts to target violence.
We're not having meetings, social interactions, and engagements that we would normally have to help stem this. We've had more than 800 of our personnel that have come down with the COVID virus. We have two that we have lost, two of our employees, one an officer and one a detention officer. So we know firsthand the impact of this pandemic.
While there have not been too many highlighted mass shootings, daily gun violence has seen a conspicuous uptick since the pandemic, which is causing concerns among families halfway through the year 2021. The coronavirus pandemic has indeed worsened the economic situation for many who find themselves having no option but to resort to crimes. We're now joined by Matthew Fogg, retired Chief Deputy Marshal, with 32 years of experience in public service. Welcome to the show, Mr. Fogg.
Good to be with you.
Many thanks. So let me ask you this. How safe are America's streets given the frequency of crime across the country?
Well, when you talk about urban areas, it's a challenge. I mean, bottom line is, I mean, your numbers are up where you've got these gun violence, but at the same time, I mean, people are living their lives. People have to go to work. People have to get on the streets, and law-abiding citizens have to do their job. So, again, you got this uptake in gun violence, mainly because law enforcement isn't out there the way it used to be. So there's a problem right there, because right now you've got this issue in America where a lot of law enforcement feels like they've been thrown under the bus because they've been exposed by a lot of the stuff that they've been doing that wasn't according to our training and what we're supposed to do.
Thank you, Mr. Fogg. We'll hear more of your insight later on in the program.
Most politicians are either ignoring the situation or trying to use the dreadful gun violence statistics to score political points against their opponents. As with any other phenomena in America, lack of safety is turning into a power play between liberals and conservatives.
Let us, the resources that we have, let them spend it, let us spend it in a way that gives the most protection to the American people, protection for their safety, protection for their rights. Funding of police is a local matter, as you know. From the standpoint of our legislation, we're not going to that place. What we're doing is talking about how we change policy to make our policing more just and that. There's some issues that we ask police to do, like mental health issues or policing in schools and all the rest, that perhaps we can shuffle some of that money around. But those are local decisions. We take an oath to protect and defend the American people. Their safety is our top priority.
Republicans are mostly taking advantage of the situation by pointing the finger of blame at Democrats and cities under their control. They also keep bringing up the progressive idea of defunding the police to argue that the surge in violence is the fault of socialists and leftists.
Well, I mean, I just think that what's happening is the cat's out the bag, so to speak. I mean, America is a country where we believe in, the right to bear arms. And that's always been an issue when it comes down to the National Rifle Association, American Life. People want to bear arms. Now you've got more guns on American streets than you've got enough guns to give every woman, man, child, and boy a gun and still have a surplus. So you got a lot of guns out there. Then you've got this so-called war on drugs, this prohibition, which doesn't work. It's just like when they had alcohol prohibition, it never worked. They understood that and they got rid of it. They need to do the same thing with drug prohibition, because people are going to get drugs. And the United States is one of the largest supply and demand places for drugs. So you're going to have the fact that it's illegal to sell, and mostly now they use most drugs and it's illegal. We talk about Controlled Substance Act.
Meanwhile, the Democrats who enjoy power, not just at the White House, but both chambers of Congress, are not doing enough to address the issue. This is creating a wide range of crime victims from all walks of life.
Again, respectful of those in law enforcement who take pride in their work, disrespectful of those who do not, we want to work together as to how we go forward.
Defunding the police has already had its costs for law enforcement. After some Democrats pursued the idea in New York City, City Council snatched $1 billion from the NYPD budget and disbanded its undercover anti-crime unit. Some cities and towns silently slashed police funds as outrage rose across the country over police brutality in the wake of the George Floyd killing.
Well, certainly that certain types of crimes have been increasing, even in so-called good neighborhoods. For example, in the neighborhood where I live, which is a very good neighborhood, it is said that at night there are people going through the neighborhood, trying cars to see if the doors are unlocked, or trying to unlock them, to either steal the cars or steal items in the cars, or taking advantage maybe in the summer of people leaving doors or windows open to commit burglaries. This is in part due to the economic situation that many people are faced with. After all, many people deemed non-essential workers have been let go, have been told we don't need you, and so go home and wait until the situation changes. But this also means that they don't have an income. In that respect, the government here in the U.S. has tried to help out with sending basically a certain amount of money to families, to citizens during this period of difficulty, or providing money to the employers with the condition that they would still pay the salary of their workers even though they were not at work. So they tried, but still, it is not the same thing as having an economy functioning well.
The U.S. police is notorious for brutality against protesters and racial minorities. However, pressure on law enforcement to cause less trouble for the government could actually have played a part in the recent surge in violence.
I'll still be at work, and they'll be back at the precinct picking up their property before I'm even done with court.
Really?
Yeah.
That's got to be frustrating.
Yeah.
And it sucks to see this, to see 16-year-old kids shooting and killing each other. Mm. And that's what we do see a lot of here. And we have 16-year-olds with robbery patterns and murder charges, and it's like they didn't actually get to be kids.
After all, defunding the police was a progressive idea that popped up in the heat of the 2020 presidential election, although it was later dismissed by the more central Democrats, such as now President Biden. Whether or not the Republicans' talking point has anything to do with the situation today, generations of Americans have fallen victim to violence running rampant in the country all throughout its history. Where are the communities heading in their struggle with gun violence in more dangerous places such as Chicago?
There is no question that Chicago has a very high level of violence. And we have to make a comment, which is very important, that the increase in violence recently in American cities, and I'm sure not only in the United States, is due to a perfect storm of factors. There has been an economic collapse because many businesses closed down, didn't have any income, they have to let their employees go, they didn't have any customers, think of the restaurants, the hotels, tourism, transportation, and so on and so forth. So the economic collapse, the social anxiety because of the pandemic, the fear that people had of each other in a sense, as someone being a transmitter of the disease. Also crisis in policing in major cities, after incidents brought to light recently of encounters between police and mostly minority members.
Many experts point out that overall crime rates have fallen compared to the past decade. However, trust in police has eroded after incidents like the murder of African-American George Floyd by a white police officer, weakening any incentives for the people to cooperate with law enforcement.
Now you can see the car is being rotated. You're able to see Officer Chauvin, you're able to see Officer King, and then Officer Lane down at his feet. You see underneath Mr. Floyd, and now the car has been rotated, now the car has been removed. And so you're able to see how they're positioned at different points in terms of with Officer Chauvin with his left knee on the neck, his right knee on Mr. Floyd's arm and chest, and then you can see here Officer Lane holding his legs, and then you can see Officer King with his knee on his torso.
After a video of George Floyd dying under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer was released, the nation rose up to slam violence against people of color in police departments. To this day, the legitimacy of the American police remains in question alongside the sharp rise in crime.
One issue that we have to deal with in the U.S. is the issue of guns. There is no question that too many people have firearms and that they can be used to commit crimes. They can be used in confrontations, in domestic violence, and so on and so forth. And this is very often a situation where there are lots of shootings in many cities. At times during a weekend, you might have 18, 20, even more dead people in Chicago or in a major city because of fights, disagreement, confrontations, robberies that go wrong, and so on and so forth.
The U.S. criminal justice system has played its role in the new crime wave, particularly with reforms designed to reduce the population of prisoners, according to some experts. The pervasive gang culture in America is yet another factor contributing to the increase in gun violence.
I was born and raised around here. I've lived on just about every block from Congress on down to Madison.
You're really part of this neighborhood.
I am a part of this neighborhood. I am a product of this neighborhood. Around here, I was a gang member. I was their queen. I was considered the big hat. I was a gang chief, which is why I love being assigned to this area because I get to give back to the community. I get to rebuild some of the things that I helped tear down.
Regaining the public trust is probably the single most important task the authorities need to achieve in order to make America's streets safe. This way, they might be able to compensate for a reduction in police funds in some communities. How do you think the Biden administration should approach the issue of safety and gun violence in America? How do you evaluate the Biden administration's performance so far?
He's already has addressed the issue, saying that they're going to send more federal troops or federal agents into the urban cities, into the places where gun violence is up. I applaud that. You got to have law enforcement out there. Those people out there that are committing these acts need to know that there will be some type of punishment, and so be swift punishment if they are out there using guns. So you got to have more people, more law enforcement focusing on that area, and the people on the street have to know that they're there. So and the Biden administration has said that that's what they're asking cities and saying, we want to come in and we want to help. So I give him an A on that. The reality is he stepped into something, though, that's already in place. It's the ball, as they say, the wheel is already rolling. So it's a challenging, very challenging for law enforcement, because right now, again, when you're talking about the war on drugs, you're talking about drugs on the street. We got pounds and pounds, millions of pounds of drugs on the street, and people are trying to survive. So people are going to sell them. The problem is when people feel like they have been wronged, then they take the law in their own hands, and that means if you go out and you kill somebody or shoot somebody or whatever, the bottom line is to make certain that you get your drugs are not interfered with. So you've got all of that going on at the same time.
Sadly, committing homicide and murder is easier than ever in the United States, with its lax gun laws providing easy access to guns for most people. Gun violence, murders, and gang activities all involve getting hold of guns, which is easier than ever before.
But there are several factors at play, and the data showing these numbers rising in cities across the country is troubling, not only for law enforcement officials, but it's something that community leaders are having to grapple with on a daily basis. And you see it in many of our big cities across the country, the kind of violence that makes it in the headlines, not only in the papers, but obviously on TV as well. And so after years of declines and dramatic declines in the crime numbers across this country in many of the big cities, what you are seeing now and what you've been seeing over the last couple of years is a reverse of that. You see the numbers really going up, and that is what we're seeing consistently now into 2021 as well.
Thousands of people die every year from gun violence as more people keep hoarding more and more firearms. The gun business in the U.S. is controlled by powerful lobbies who won't allow gun control laws to pass against their profit. From professional criminals to normal people beside themselves, guns could provide the illusion of a go-to solution to deal with the conflict at hand.
The lack of security is always a concern, because if you don't have security, then you just never know what kind of, who's going to create what kind of nefarious act, and people can be hurt. So when you talk about public safety, you have to have security first. So reality is that if we're not secure in any place, any building, any location, security is always your number one priority when you're in law enforcement and you're trying to make certain that people, you know, we just got people in this world that want to do nefarious things and break the laws and so forth. So you just have to have security. So that's essential. That's number one when you're talking about law enforcement and how we do our operations.
The heaviest burden of daily gun violence is at communities of color. Cities such as Philadelphia, St. Louis, Chicago, and Oakland. The latest crime wave is heightening pressure on President Biden to make investment in preventing inner-city gun violence, focused primarily on black and brown communities.
I have kids growing up in this world. I got three beautiful children. They're mixed, but even though they're mixed, they look like me, they look the same, and it could have easily been them, it could have easily been me.
Michael Holliday came here from Houston, where Floyd grew up.
Imagine if it was your child. How would you feel? Imagine if it was your son on the ground, screaming, "I can't breathe, help me, please." This community already knows his name, but the world needs to hear his name. So until we have justice, there will be no peace.
The president has come under attack for trying to hire more police force above pre-pandemic levels. That has caused backlash from African-American movements, some describing it as a slap in the face of millions of them who came out in support of Biden in the 2020 presidential race. Whether or not crime will lessen under the Biden administration remains to be seen. I'm your host, Mila Javamardi. Be sure to tune in next week when we come back with another episode of We the People.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.